Welcome to Facilitating the Mission, the podcast of Shepherd Staff Mission Facilitators. My name is Brian Mondock.
And my name is Jeff Jackson.
Hey, Jeff, how are you, man?
I am good, man. It's been warp speed the last few weeks. A lot of good things going on, but glad to be here today and have a few minutes to knock out another podcast.
Okay, well, tell us what your next couple of trips are.
Well, actually, I'm going to be heading up to Northern California tomorrow with one of our staff members, meeting with a couple that are going to be doing some business as mission ventures in Central Asia.
Wow.
And yeah, we're going to be meeting actually with them and a leader of their home church and talking about some security issues and other things about sending and caring for them. And then also we're going to be meeting with some of the leaders of a house church type network that's kind of tied in with Francis Chan.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, the We Are Church network. For those that are listening and aren't familiar with that, it's kind of a new thing that Francis Chan's been doing the last few years.
There's a huge buzz around that.
There is a lot of buzz around that. And, you know, his latest book is quite provocative in a lot of ways. I've read it. And, you know, yeah, he brings up some really thought-provoking stuff. And I think even though, you know, maybe nobody would read it and be in total agreement, I think he brings up some good issues about the way we do church and so forth. So, yeah, I think the book is called Letters to the Church. And so really, really worth the read. And then one of the books that he references in there, which I found very interesting because I've read that one too, is called Total Church by a guy named Tim Chester, who's a Brit and has a sort of a home church type network in UK. And I found that book, in a sense, in many ways, more helpful. Also thought-provoking, but I think more helpful and practical, putting into practice some of the issues that Francis Chan brings up in his book.
Interesting. Yeah. You know, the home church movement kind of about every decade or so becomes kind of a front burner topic, and then it kind of fades to the back. But this time, you know, Francis Chan is a huge personality.
Yes.
And someone that is, you know, he's a phenomenal communicator.
Yes.
A very solid guy. It'd be interesting to see what happens with this move, you know, especially there's huge pushback against the megachurch move right now. It'd be interesting to see what happens, you know, if this is a cultural thing or if this is a God thing.
Yeah, I think in the past, you know, because I've wrestled with it, you know, being in more of a traditional church, my whole walk with the Lord and pastoring and church planting more, you might say, traditional churches. You know, there's sort of like seasons where there's a big buzz that house churches are the way to go. And I think in the past, it was more coming from the angle of preferences of like, well, I'm just sort of tired, or I've been burned with the traditional way of doing church. I'm gonna go do the house church thing. What I feel is different about now is that the context that we're living life in America now, where our culture as a whole is going, where those that take the Bible seriously and navigate life, you know, with the Bible as actually the primary source of their worldview, the way our overall culture has changed, I just have a sense that there's going to be more and more interest in like home churches, not just out of preference, but in some ways out of necessity because of the changing context where rather than in a sense being in the majority to actually take the Bible seriously and live it out, you're going to be in the minority. And that's going to become even clearer than it ever has in the past. And there may even be some of the experience of oppressed minority as you go along. So it's really interesting stuff.
Well, you know, when I first became a Christian, there was this whole narrative about, you know, this Cold War narrative, you know, about the Russians were going to take over. And the only way our faith was going to survive is if we went underground like the church in China.
Right.
And so, you know, when I had just gotten out of the Marines, and of course I was trained to hate Russians.
Yeah, that's right. And I spied on Russians when I was in. That's right.
And I'm sure we still spy on Russians, but
yeah.
But it was like, that was from behind the Iron Curtain, you know? And so that was a narrative, you know, that really made a lot of sense. and I don't know, it was semi-diabolical and hugely countercultural. And there was, but you know, 30 years later, gosh, I now I sit back, I'm like, I remember the Cold War, and that was like a thing back then, and and so I'm a little more skeptical now, of these different moves that come along. But at the same time, I don't think God only operates through mega churches.
Absolutely, it's not. It's never an either or thing with God. It's like most other things; it's both and.
And I love the idea of like not having overhead and things like that. But on the flip side of that is I love, you know, I'm here in New England, right, and we have all of these, you know, we have all of these churches that are, you know, 150 years old, a couple hundred years old in these quaint little towns, and they have this huge steeple that's visible from everywhere. And the idea when those churches were built is that was a community center.
Yes.
Where you could get have your soul cared for. And, you know, there weren't phones, there weren't, you know, there wasn't internet, but you could see that steeple from anywhere. And right, that's where you knew where to go to gather as God's people. Well, we're in a different day now, but I love that concept of having, I mean, I know it's, you know, that we are sent out, you know, the model is not to create this where we draw everybody in.
Right.
But at the same time, I just love the idea of the church having that kind of visibility and being a place where your soul is safe and your soul can be cared for. And I don't know that we have that sense anymore.
No, we don't. Yeah. I mean, I agree. And even the whole idea of, you know, in First Timothy, I want to say it's 1 Timothy 3:15, where he says, you know, that the church is the pillar and ground of truth. Let me check that out here real quick. Yeah, you know, Paul says to Timothy, hey, if I'm delayed, I want you to know how you will know how people ought to conduct themselves in God's household, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and foundation of the truth. And tying in with what you were just saying, you know, the idea that in the past with that big steeple and stuff, anybody who was confused about what life's all about and, you know, whatever, and if they wanted to find out, quote, the truth, that, you know, that building was a place you could go to and hear maybe a different take on what's real, what's not real, what's meaningful, and so forth. And so, you know, the church was to be the pillar and ground of truth here on the earth. And in its local expression, people should be able to find that. And so, but again, the context is so changed that seeing the church as a building, which is sort of what it morphed into, is, and then where the bigger culture has gone, like I said, has sort of moved away from that reality. So, yeah, anyway.
We're in a church building fundraising period at our church, and that, you know, just to maintain the church, you know, just to maintain the grounds. And
right,
it's like a uphill battle. If there was a way to like just take that money and give to missionaries. And I think that's part of the concept that Francis Chan is. I haven't read the book. I've read a ton of Francis Chan, and not all of, well, I guess he doesn't have a ton. So, but
right, exactly.
I'm familiar with his writing.
He's got a kilo.
Yeah. He's got a couple of kilos out there, yeah. Right? Yeah. Okay. No, yeah. But I get where he's coming from. You know, this isn't what church is supposed to be, kind of a, you know, thing. And so, I'd love to see him have success in this area, but also having worked on staff at big churches, you know, there's a side of it that, where that's competition, man.
It is competition. And you know, as an organization, you know, at Shepherd Staff, because, you know, our vision is to help, you know, to come alongside, to facilitate churches, send the people that God calls from their midst to serve around the world. You know, we're encountering, I mean, obviously, not literally 100% of the missionaries that we serve right now have been sent from, you know, traditionally structured churches, whether small, medium, or large. and or mega churches. We serve quite a few of, you know, what would be categorized as mega churches. And the reality of it is now that these home church networks, like We Are Church and some of the other ones that are around, they're realizing that, you know, hey, God may call some of their members to be missionaries. And in some ways, because of the intimacy of home churches, the depth of relationship, the, in a sense, bigger resource funds financially, because they don't have the overhead that a lot of regular churches do, more and more of them are getting into the idea of sending to the field. And so we're exploring that, you know, right now with one couple that we serve that I was referencing earlier. And so it's kind of thought provoking to me. And it's kind of, you know, I think there's a trend happening here. Not that the traditional way of doing churches through traditional, you know, missions methods is going to change anytime quick. Uh-huh. But the reality of it is that more and more, I think the house church movement is going to be sending their own. And the other thing that's interesting about that, and it's not just because of the house church movement, but, you know, more and more you're finding people, and I think this is totally valid. This is one of the newer things that God's doing, that, you know, sort of, I guess, under the umbrella of business as missions, you know, people that are going to go and try to reach unengaged, unreached people groups in countries that are impossible to access in traditional missionary status. Uh-huh. Doing for-profit business, I think, is definitely something that, you know, God has stirred the church up to think about and do. And, you know, we're involved with some of that. But there's also this other sort of sub-movement within there where, hey, you know, where you're saying, you know, either the pastors or leaders of a local church or the leaders of a home church network are saying to their people, look, if you've got a skill, you work for a company that's a multinational company, or you've got a skill, you know, have you ever thought about saying, Lord, you know, could I bring the inventory that you've given me to the table by working for a company in another country where I'm not going to be in traditional missionary status where I raise support, but I'm going to intentionally accept a job, look for and accept a job in another country, especially one that's a, you know, creative access country, in order to be living among people that need to hear and need to see Jesus lived out in front of them.
Such an interesting concept. So non-traditional church, non-traditional mission sending, this is a radical kind of a podcast today.
It really is. And God's always doing something fresh, you know? And to me, that's I think, what's happening here. That's my sense of it.
You know, I was part of this businessmen's mentoring network when I was living down in South Florida called LifeWork Leadership. And one of the things that, you know, we talked about, and it was difficult, but it was difficult for me as a former missionary and kind of working in a church guy to process this, but we had the new CEO, or I guess CEO is the right term for of Operation Mobilization. He's mm-hmm. a younger guy. I think he's Irish, if it's still the same guy, but that was one of the things he talked about to this group of businessmen, was about doing missions a new way. And this is Operation Mobilization, you know,
huge,
yeah. You know, they need the traditional channels, but they also know that, I mean, there's many that feel that the current model is broken of missionaries raising support and doing it that way. And I've kind of taken a wait and see approach, because I hate to think, you know, a philosophical trend is moving through the church and it's just a trendy idea rather than a thought through with a methodology and steps and training and you know, on ramps, you know, supporting this concept. But Americans really, really want to do missions. They want to reach the lost. But some of the financial ways just don't work for everybody. Anyway, that's.
Well, and it's not just that the financial ways aren't working that well anymore for a number of different reasons, but also, again, accessibility, you know, into the countries where the traditional thing where you're going to go in and do some noble kingdom work and get a visa to do that is just, you know, that's more and more. That's going to be very difficult to do in the countries where representatives of Jesus are most needed. And then what ends up happening is everybody goes to the countries that will still accept missionary status.
Right.
So those countries are overloaded with missionaries.
Right.
If there can be such a thing as being overloaded with missionaries. And then the countries that actually have the greatest need, you know, remain with the greatest need.
Well, we haven't at Shepherd Staff haven't, I mean, I know that we're exploring the business as a mission concept and launching some different initiatives. But we have had missionaries go into those creative access countries and even do businesses while doing, you know, while making disciples in those countries. And I, you know, and that was my foot in the door into countries like Yemen. Well, mainly that country where folks were, you know, they were doing businesses with Yemeni friends. The Yemeni had to own 51% of the business.
Right.
And then the Westerner could come in and own the other 49% of it and run it. And the thing is they just couldn't, they couldn't live off the economy. They had to, you know, they couldn't compete for jobs. They had to create jobs, in fact, to get visas. And so it wasn't just that they set up NGOs, non-governmental organizations, but they would set up businesses and schools and
and
worked in schools. And some of them were employed. I know in Saudi Arabia, there's a huge need for teachers, and then even like tons and tons of servant help, you know, maids and groundskeepers and things from the Philippines, and you know, tons and tons of those folks are Christians. So
that's right. That's right.
You know, and they're making, you know, they're making a living wage, you know, earning a paycheck rather than, you know, raising support. So,
yeah. And Filipino Christians have embraced that actually. They're, you know, even back when I was there, which is, you know, 25 years ago, I left there. We returned back to the States. Even back in those days, they recognized that, hey, you know, the reality of it is, because of the economy in the Philippines and a number of other issues, look, we make more money than we can in our own countries. So they go overseas as workers. That's why they're all over the globe. And then they realize that a lot of, you know, the ones that were really following the Lord realize, hey, we're going out of the country anyway. We're going to these countries where, you know, they need Jesus. And so they actually have intentional training programs, some organizations to train Filipinos that are going to be workers in Middle Eastern countries or other countries on how to share their faith, you know, with those of other faiths, Islam or Hinduism or whatever. And so I just think, you know, I think that there's, you know, God is creative and he's told us what his end game is. And we know that there's going to be representatives from every people, tribe, nation, and tongue. And the remaining ones that need to be reached to kind of, you know, bring that reality into reality are in these difficult access countries, or what we call creative access countries. And I was thinking about it the other day, and I don't really like to use a lot of warfare language when talking about missions for obvious reasons.
Sure.
But it's almost like, you know, the U.S. military, for example, you know, it has a goal. It exists for a reason, to protect the United States and its citizens. And so when there's actually a war or a conflict, you know, the U.S. military is multifaceted. It has dozens of on-ramps to accomplish its goal. So you have a Navy, you have an Air Force, you have the Marines, you have the Army. And then within each one of those branches, you have specialty. You know, you have artillery and armor and tanks and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then you don't, but, and most people don't think about it, but then there's the psychological warfare.
Yep.
There's the electronic warfare, which is what I was involved with in the Army, where we literally spied on the Soviet Union back in the day. So there's, you know, there's electronic warfare, there's psychological warfare, there's, and so, you know, if you're going to accomplish your cause, you've got to look for as many on-ramps as possible,
right,
to bring that cause to fruition. And when I look at, you know, God's end game, I think that this whole thing, business as missions in general, and then within that, you know, what's called business for transformation, which I think we've talked about before. And then within that, the idea of, hey, even individual Christians that have skills that are going to intentionally take jobs in other countries are just all new planks.
Yeah.
God's constantly producing new planks to get his people to where those that don't know him are. And that's exciting to me. And sort of tying in with, you know, where things are at. I think it's not just the fact that he comes up with new planks for people to access those unengaged, unreached people groups, but in a sense, the launch pads that send them are, in a sense, new. The launch mechanisms. And so launch mechanisms have been, generally speaking, traditional churches.
Right.
And that's going to continue. But there are some now other launch pads, and those may be like home churches and the church in other forms than what we've traditionally known it as.
So this group, this couple that you're going to go see up in Northern California, they're coming from this Francis Chan church movement.
Well, they what they've done is they're actually part of a traditional church, which is, you know, who we're serving. But they've also got connections and relationships with what Francis Chan's group is doing.
Uh-huh.
And so they're sort of getting a little immersion into that prior to departure. And so we're looking at that. And then just as a ministry, you know, being able to say, hey, we're somewhat nimble. You know, one of our core values is innovation and the believing that God is innovative. And so as God is finding new launching mechanisms, we're here to, we can adapt, we can adjust to help those new launching mechanisms do what they'd like to do also. So it's kind of exciting, actually.
That is exciting.
And even, you know, I'm going to be attending a conference in April. And I think it's okay to put this out there is, It's called Business for Transformation Expo.
Okay.
It's in Houston in April, at the end of April. And so it's put on by an organization called the Open Network, openusa.net, I think is their website. But anyway, one of the things that they've asked me to do is to do a workshop on, you know, church-based missionary care for BAM workers.
Oh.
Which is kind of thought-provoking. Because, you know, normally in the realm of missionary care, I'm dealing with missionaries at traditional missionary status, most of them, and then also, you know, traditional churches with traditional, say, structures, or that have the potential for structures to be set up for missionary care. And so they've provoked me and asked me to, you know, to prepare a workshop for, you know, how does a church that's sending a BAM worker, or let's say they've got an engineer in their church that's taken an engineering job in somewhere in Southeast Asia, and he's going out as an employee of a multinational company, but in a sense, he's going intentionally to represent the kingdom. What kind of care does he need? What kind of care, and how is it different than what traditional missionaries need versus what kind of needs are there for the worker who's going to work 50 hours a week among people that are of a radically different culture? He's going to actually get more cross-cultural immersion than a traditional missionary does.
Somebody's going to listen to this podcast and say, hey, I have an idea. We need to start an employment agency with this mission.
That's already happening, actually.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, there are other organizations that are already onto this.
Wow.
And again, our niche, you know, is what I'm discovering, you know, is our niche is, again, the equipping the churches to send well, whatever form the church that's sending takes. How do we send well? And again, I'm working through now, you know, and I'm not there yet. Obviously, I'm thinking through, you know, okay, well, what are the core experiences that every person living in a cross-cultural context goes through, and how can you speak into their lives? And then what's unique to somebody going to work for a foreign company in a foreign country where they're the only American working at the job? doing their job for sure, but doing it under a whole different way of supervision, view of management. I don't know if you remember, but many years ago, I took classes on supervision from a local community college. And there used to be sort of two schools of thought on management. One was like a Japanese, I think they both may have been derived from Japanese. It was called X management and Y management. Have you heard of that?
I have not.
Okay. Well, anyway, back in the day, and I'm sure it wasn't, it was new to me at the time, but this was like 80 or 81. The two schools of thought were, you know, one school of management thought was that if, you know, employees want to work and they really are inclined to love their jobs, and if you treat them a certain way and assign them tasks a certain way, that's how you keep employees happy and you get them to be the most productive. And then the other one, the Y management, for example, was the complete opposite. People don't want to work. They're only here because they have to be here. And so you've got to manage them and set up things, mechanisms to motivate them to do their job well. And so the two different schools of thought, you know, and how they contrast with one another. And then I didn't know it at the time because I wasn't as far along in my thinking. But, you know, how does culture play into that, into both styles? Yeah. So I find that kind of stuff really thought provoking.
And so now, you know, this is something that somebody has to be totally equipped with as they go and pursue opportunities.
Yes.
In other countries. And I guess for... As you were mentioning this, I was thinking these are people, Americans going to work for American companies, but this is Americans going to work for
multinational companies. Yeah. What are called multinational. So your boss and your fellow employees, there may not be another American there besides you.
Wow.
And then you get into specific stuff, cultural stuff, like, you know, and I've even had experiences like this when I used to manage 7-Eleven, corporate 7-Elevens was, you know, if you're dealing with an honor and shame based culture versus a guilt and innocence based culture, you know, to motivate somebody to do the right thing, the approach of your boss is going to be different if he's coming from an honor and shame background.
Uh-huh.
So he gets you to do the right thing by telling you if you don't, you're going to be shamed in front of the other employees.
Right.
Versus an American guy thinking, and he won't come and tell you directly what you did wrong because he doesn't want to cause you to lose face.
Right.
So he'll speak to a third party. And then, so you get into that kind of stuff. It's fascinating.
Wow.
You know, because we're very frank. We're very blunt. Here's what I want you to do. And, you know, I remember even when I worked for the county back in the day where if it was somebody, you know, from a different, you know, more of a collectivist culture, you know, which they tend to beat around the bush before they get to the point.
Right.
You know, so it's like you're burning up 15 minutes talking about this, all this trivial stuff. And we Americans sitting there, would you just get to the point, you know?
Yeah.
And then if we manage that way of people that are from a collectivistic culture. So you see there, wow, it's kind of fascinating. Yeah. So
you'll be at this conference, you know, talking through some of that kind of stuff. It'll be interesting to get your feedback after that conference.
Yeah, and I'm just coming at it from the angle. Obviously, you can't do a lot in a workshop, but it's coming at it. It's basically sort of a workshop on, hey, if you're going to send church people, if you're going to send somebody, you know, to work in a business overseas, here's what you need to know to care for them. About culture, basics of culture, how culture plays itself out, maybe in business and those kind of things. Kind of cool, exciting, actually.
That is exciting. It's so interesting to see how things are unfolding.
It really is. And again, God is just, I stand in awe again of just how big God is and how big his plans and purposes are and how he's willing to let, you know, just creativity, how we're created in his image and likeness. And you got this amazing creativity to express obedience to him. There's just not one way to be obedient to him. Obedience is multifaceted. And that's exciting to me too.
Well, Jeff, try to have, you know, when you go to meet with this house church movement group, try to have some takeaways from that you'd want to share, you know, based on, you know, what you know, you know, some of the books you've read and what they're doing and where they are as far as the Great Commission. I'm very, very curious, and hopefully those listening, we've done a little something to whet their appetite for this different approach. You know, there's some people who are thinking, yeah, this is the way I'd want to do church. And then there's some folks like, man, I hate going to people's houses. And
yeah, that's right.
You know,
and again, it's never an either or. And one thing that I've noticed, and I'll kind of shut this down after this, because is a lot of times the people I know that have made the transition out of quote traditional church into house churches, they get bitter and they go out and they do nothing but attack and critique traditional church.
And I've seen the same thing. I mean, I've had even some close family members that have gone that route. They've been burned in traditional churches and just not really understanding how some things work, you know?
Right.
And then the house church thing doesn't work out and now they don't go to church.
Yeah, they either don't go or they come back to traditional church, but they're just sort of disengaged.
Right. And so.
And critical. Yeah.
But I think it could be a good thing. You know, the thing is, I mean, think about, you know, I've not been to a church that hasn't really tried to launch an awesome home fellowships or community groups or life groups.
Exactly.
Whatever you want to call them. And it's always the same exact theological push is, you know, the early church met in houses, you know, and so, so now, and so, I mean, are we going to meet in a house? Are we going to meet in a mega church? Are we going to meet in both? Or are we going to meet in one or the other, you know? And so anyway, just intriguing stuff. I'm very curious. I will make sure to put links to these books. And as I go and get those Amazon links, I will probably buy them myself. Mm-hmm. And read through them because I'm intrigued and I've always kind of heard the negative stuff, but at the same time I've been invited to house churches and love teaching there. I love the folks that go regularly and so I mean I know God's in it, God's moving, and we need to help them send people into the mission field.
Amen. Amen.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. To learn more about becoming a missionary with Shepherd Staff, go to ssmfi.org/join. Connect with us on Facebook or Twitter by searching @ShepStaff on either platform.